need is my family. See, everything else is going to pass away, you know, that police, army, all that. But the family is my first ministry. Amen. And so looking forward to good dialogue. I'm not really concerned about completing the slide deck when they get that up, because I'm going to come back next month if Pastor will have me to come back. I'm scheduled to come back. If I don't come back, that means something happened. I mean, we got disconnected. And so, and I want you to also think from a standpoint of, as we discuss this subject today, not just about where you are today. Because you may listen today and go, oh, you know, that doesn't apply to me. I'm not really leading anything. But God always prepares us. And preparation is one of the keys to success. And so think about where you're going. Think about where God wants you to go. Think about where God is leading you. He has a wonderful plan for you. Really does. Wonderful plan for Faith Chapel. Absolutely dynamic, awesome, spectacular, creative, world-changing, life-altering, community changing, just a plan that's really going to impact the world. I told Pastor a while back, everywhere I go, I take Faith Chapel with me. And so we've had the opportunity, especially over the last few months, to go places and meet people and do things that where God has opened doors. And everywhere we go, we take Faith Chapel with us. And pastors mentoring and leading and his example with us. I got a thumb up from back there. So we're going to put the first slide up, just the cover slide. There we go. They are so anointed back there. They epitomize the word teamwork. Just outstanding. So what we want to do is get started and talk about the leader as a coach. And you're going to flip for me, or am I going to have a pointer, or it's up to you. You got it? All right, good deal. So I want you to reflect for just a moment. Let's do this. What do you think is the most important part of leadership? Just think about that for just a moment. What's the number one leadership skill? What's the goal? What should be the goal of every leader? To model? I hear to model over here. To assist others in becoming what God has ordained them to be. That's real good, too. Yes, sir.
To develop the people they lead.
So I see a common theme. It sounds like the group is saying the number one skill of leadership should be to model, develop something about other people. So the number one goal is not just to accomplish the mission or to accomplish the vision. What the group is saying, and I agree, it's about developing others. Next slide. Tom Peters agrees with you. The number one leadership skill is the ability to develop others. Tom Peters is a business leadership guru, lots of books and all of that stuff, and he agrees with you. So you all nailed it. That's the number one leadership skill. It's the ability to develop other people. So we're going to study this today and look at it. Next slide. We'll see how we're going to do this. This is our objective for today, fourfold. Number one, to broaden our thinking. I like the way Pastor is concentrating on thinking. You know, our thinking determines our behaviors, our actions, our speech. And so number one, we want to broaden our thinking concerning leadership and its challenges. Leadership is challenging. Okay, you may think that's a negative confession, but leadership is challenging. It is. Leadership was challenging to Jesus. I mean, he looked at those disciples sometimes. I love the way he talked to them. Man, how long have I got to be with you? That's what he was saying. So, you know, I've been with you all this time. Don't you know if you've seen me, you've seen the Father? You could sense the exasperation in his voice. You talking about show me the Father? I've been with you 3 years. Don't you know by now when you see me, you've seen the Father? And so leadership is challenging. I often like to say it's abnormal. It really is. It really is. I'm going to prove that out too. And so secondly, we want to explore coaching as a tool for team development. Thirdly, identify team needs and techniques to stay connected, because we want to stay connected to our teams. And then fourthly, techniques to improve team members' performance. So we're going to look at all of that starting today. Depending on how far we get, we may pick it up next month. Next slide. Here's our agenda. Intro, we're going to start out with at a macro level. Look at leadership, look at some of the challenges, look at some insights. You know, I think one day I was talking to Minister Spann, and I mentioned to you that it's a leadership laboratory. We're in leadership laboratories quite often where you don't have all the answers. That's why prayer is important. Sometimes things pop up that you've never experienced before. And so you try to gather all the information. Pastor talked about it. It's Saturday. Going through the process. We have a military decision-making process where we gather the information, develop courses of action, analyze them, compare them, decide, and all that stuff. And so we're going to talk about leadership. Then we're going to go into a little activity, let you break up into groups. I think you'll enjoy that. We'll take a break. Then we'll come back and talk about what your team needs, and we'll go through the agenda like that. All right, so let's get rolling now. Next slide. Think about this for a moment. Who coached you? Who coached you? What is your definition of a great coach? Who are the people who personally inspired you? What was it that made each of them a good coach? In what ways did each of them inspire you? Also, in what ways did each of them challenge you? And what is the single most important lesson that this coach that you had an encounter with somewhere in your life, the single most important lesson they taught you? Somebody give me an example. Answer one of those questions. Who coached you?
I'll say my dad.
Your dad. And what did he teach you?
He taught me that there's nothing that I cannot do.
Wow, her dad, and there's nothing that she cannot do. And you still remember today. Who coached you? Okay. Who coached you?
A gentleman by the name of Darnell Self. He was a successful leader in the organization I worked with.
Okay.
And he had the ability, I think as a leader, sometimes you have to have the ability to connect with people's spirit or kind of talk down to their souls or be able to reach it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And he was just an outstanding motivator.
So he connected with you. He touched you.
And I never had a personal relationship with him.
Wow. So that's mentoring from afar.
Yeah.
All right. And you still remember it today. Okay. Who coached you? Who coached you? Your dad coached you? Okay. The pastor said his dad coached him. All right, ma'am.
My dad coached me, and he taught me loyalty and commitment, not to go into anything half doing it.
Wow. Loyalty and commitment. I see a lot of dads being mentioned. That shows the importance of fatherhood. I don't care what the world says.
My first pastor, he drilled in me to be me. He taught me to be. Just be me. It was okay to be just to be me.
Wow. Your first pastor taught you to be you. She'll be our last one right there. And her, Minister Dale, but right behind you. She's
Pastor Mike, when I started working here, he taught me what integrity really was when he went on a trip, business trip, and he came back and he was two or three pennies short of returning the monies that that the church had given him. And he insisted on me waiting until he went to his office and brought me those three pennies back.
Wow.
And, I mean, you know, that just marked me because I'm thinking, God, three pennies? But it marked me for life as it relates to integrity.
Oh, that's fabulous. Good examples. I know we could go on and on with that because as you look back over your life, I like the way our president said it last week. It took some heat for it, but you didn't get here on your own. And people criticized him for saying that. Oh, what do you mean? No, someone helped you along the way. Someone, you may not even realize that someone helped you. You might have thought you got the promotion on your own, but you didn't know that somebody was in the back room talking and pushing for you to get the promotion. You know, you didn't get here on your own. None of us did. My grandmother was the greatest natural influence in my life. She raised five of us. And I was the oldest, and so she relied on me a lot more to help raise my siblings. And she was tough. Ooh. She'd be in jail now. She was tough. She would knock us out. And she would say, boy, I kill you. All I want somebody to bring me some cigarettes to the jail, I kill you. And we believed her. We believed her. We knew she would. And she was tough. But we didn't use the word excellence, but she established that as a standard. She would always say, if you didn't have time to do it right, how would you have time to do it over? And so she insisted we do it right the first time. And she believed in that doing it over. We were poor. We didn't have a lawnmower. So we'd be out there with our swing blades, me and my brother. And if we, you know, imagine trying to cut a yard with a swing blade. But that's another story. But it had to be done right. And then she got home and it wasn't right, we had to do it over. And she, so that was my grandmother. I mean, she was awesome. She was awesome. She was awesome. She'd be so proud today. She just believed that circumstances shouldn't direct your future. Where you are today doesn't determine where you're going. And just a great, 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 great woman of God. And so she coached us, and we still remember her. So why is coaching important? Let's talk about leadership. Next slide. These are some insights I have. First of all, people can't perform beyond their training and development. And sometimes as leaders, we're wishing people would do well and they would get everything done that we need them to get done, but they cannot perform their leadership. They can't perform beyond their training, their skill level. You know, that's something we can't pray them through either. See, we can't pray that the person has the skill if they don't have it. Now, God can anoint them, but we've got to give them some training. And sometimes in the church environment, I talked to hit a pastor in my police office yesterday. We get to talking sometimes, and sometimes we don't concentrate on that natural thing like training and development. Not an issue here because we have a learning and training culture. Amen, Minister Melinda?
Amen.
That's right. And so we're ahead of the game here. We do a better job of training skills than we do training leaders. We really, really do. And I see it from every perspective. I mean, when I talk about the leadership laboratory, you know, when you're trying to lead the largest law enforcement agency in the state, almost 1,200 employees, and then leading the only chemical brigade in the Army Reserve, about 2,600 soldiers, you get to see a lot about leadership, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Sometimes you hit it. Sometimes you miss it by a mile. And The key is to get up and try it again and keep going. But we do a better job of training skills than we do training leaders. And then the best way to train good employees is to give them good leaders. You mentioned modeling earlier. Because a good role model is much more effective than a good class. You know, a class lasts 2-3 hours, it's over. But a good role model, a good leader, a good coach, a good significant other who is in your life, who's challenging you, who's inspiring you and all of that, is much better than a good class. Can I get a witness there? Yes. So, good leadership, I mentioned earlier, is abnormal. Why do I say that? I had the honor of being in Seattle a few months ago, and I can't seem to stay seated. I love this leadership thing. So I got to move around a little bit. And I was speaking to, great honor, speaking to an international group of police chiefs from all over the world, everywhere. And I don't know, God opened the door for me to come and talk to them about leadership. And one of the points I made, we were talking about, the subject was increasing your strategic capacity when things go wrong. Because things go wrong when you're leading a large organization. And one of the things I mentioned to them was, like I said earlier, leadership is abnormal because the default position is to do nothing. Now, I want you to get out of the church mindset, the Faith Chapel mindset, for just a minute. Think about when you worked in the world. Think about when you were in school. Think about some of those challenging situations and challenging people that everybody knew wasn't doing the right thing, and it was easier just to ignore it. Do you remember those situations where it's like, you know what? That's Joe. Joe always been like that. Joe don't ever do what they say, and they scared of Joe. And so the default position at times is to do nothing. I call leadership at times it's like herding cats. You've seen cowboy movies where they're herding the cows and they walking along. Imagine herding cats. Cue up that video for me. Herding cats.
This man right here is my great grandfather. He's the first cat herder in our family.
Herding cats. Don't let anybody tell you it's easy.
Anybody can herd cattle. Holding together 10,000 half-wild short hairs, well, that's another thing altogether.
Being a cat herder is probably about the toughest thing I think I've ever done.
I got this one this morning right here, and if you look at his face, it's just ripped to shreds, you know?
You see the movies, you hear the stories, I'm living a dream. Not everyone can do what we do.
I wouldn't do nothing else.
It ain't an easy job, but when you bring a herd into town and you ain't lost a one of them, ain't a feeling like it in the world.
EDS, managing the complexities of the digital economy.
Herding cats. Because think about it, you're trying to get, just from this setting, you're trying to get the strategic vision in motion, you're trying to get everybody moving in the same direction, you're trying to make sure you have all the resources, you got a board of directors, you have congregants, you have vision partners, you got training and development you need to get done, you got Sunday service to prepare for, you got the social media piece that has to get done, you got the payroll and all the personnel benefits things that have to get done, and you need all that moving in the same direction. It's like herding cats, because stuff tends to run all over the place. Juggling a lot of balls. And you think you have the cats lined up for a moment, and all of a sudden 10 of them veer off in the other direction. And somebody's got to bring them back. You are all cat herders. Pastor's counting on you. He's counting on the staff, the VPs, the leaders to herd the cats. Notice what the cowboy said at the end. He said, when you get them all to town and you hadn't lost any, that's a great day. You know, and I thought about when I was preparing, because Jesus said, Lord, Father, I haven't lost any. All that you gave me, I've kept them all. The only one I lost was the son of perdition, Judas, and that's so the scripture could be fulfilled. So we knew where he was going from the beginning, but I hadn't lost any that you truly gave me. And we want to say at the end of the day that we haven't lost any. Haven't, Father, everyone that you gave me, we help them to develop and get them to where you called them to be. Herding cats. You'll never look at a cat the same. Don't be walking around here next week saying meow to each other. All right, so next point. Who are you? Next. You are what you repeatedly do, and who's watching? Everyone else, and they figure us out. Whether it's in a leadership role, whether it's at home, the kids know which parent is the easier parent. They already know. We were talking this morning about my kids. My youngest daughter, we're teaching, this week was the first week I'm teaching her how to drive. She's 15 now. Well, mama don't play that. She don't play that practice driving thing. Amber's not going to be able to drive her to the store, none of that stuff. Mama, she established that with Crystal. She don't play that. She don't ride with them until I certify them. I have to certify them just like some beef grade A. I have to give them a stamp that they're ready to drive. If not, Mama won't be in the car with them. She don't play that. And well, the kids know that. So Amber don't ask Mama to take it. She knows. She ain't going to go to Mama. Teach me how to drive. She already know what the answer is. So took her out Sunday evening for the first time. And the child's so funny, she encouraged herself in the Lord. She driving down the road and didn't hit nothing. I'm doing so good. I said, baby, you don't know if you're doing good or not. I tell you whether you're doing good. So we had a good time with that. And so we took her back out last night. So everyone else, they figure us out, even our kids do. And then leadership defined. The Army taught me this definition when I was 13 years old. Freshman at Phillips High School. Leadership is the art, not the science. It's the art of influencing people. And by the way, you're going to get a copy of the slides. So don't try to write this down. See, I've had this memorized for 30-something years. That's why I don't have to look back there at that. Leadership is the art of influencing people in such a manner as to gain their willing obedience, loyalty, respect, and cooperation in order to accomplish the mission, or in this case, accomplish the vision. Now notice, we did not say leadership is a science, because science is exact. It's an art. And when people look at art, you see different things. You look at some of those paintings and stuff and sculptures, and you see stuff other people don't see, and you see all these different angles, and that's our view of leadership. It's an art. But notice what it's the art of. Influence. It's the art of influence. And God has called us to influence. We're called to influence our world, our families, our sections, our teams, our offices, our divisions, our bureaus, our units, whatever, our ministries, whatever it is that we're a part of. Whether we're the leader over it or not, it's irrelevant. We're still called to influence. We're called to, tell your neighbor, you're called to influence. And then we want, you know, we want willing obedience. We want people to want to. I've worked for three police departments now. What's interesting, the sergeant rank, that's the first level leader, the most important rank in any department, much more important than the chief, because they have more direct contact with the officers and the citizens. And so every now and then you run across a new sergeant, new first line leader, and when we tell them, this is what I tell them in their week-long leadership training class, is you shouldn't have to tell people do it because I'm the sergeant. You shouldn't have to say do it because I'm the minister, I'm the ministry manager. We should influence people enough to want to. And then you don't have to go around pointing at rank and titles and all of that. It's just, you know, because people know what your rank and title is. Why do you have to remind them every time? I mean, are you not sure what it is? Because we know what it is. In order to accomplish the mission or the vision, that's why we do it. Want to take care of people and get done what God tells us to do. But I put these two points up there. Leadership is a position, right? How many people in here have positions? We have positions, and with those positions comes a certain amount of inherent leadership. But notice, that's formal authority, and it's from above. You know, Psalm 75 says all promotions come from the Lord. But then we also know God delegates authority, so some of us are promoted because God touched pastor's heart to promote and to assign different responsibilities. But the divergent part of that is leadership is a choice. It's a choice. And that comes from beneath. That's moral authority. That's the want to. That's that informal leadership where there's no title. There's no rank heaviness. The best example I can give, as a brand new second lieutenant, back in 1983, I had my first platoon, 30-something soldiers I was responsible for. I was 19 years old. I was made for this, you know, 19. Army gave me a butter bar and said, you're a second lieutenant. And I found out quickly, I didn't have all the authority that I thought I had. Because I had a kid in that unit. He was called 50 Cents. This was before the rapper. 50 Cents. 50 Cents was about 20. Was as lazy as he could be. And I asked him, why they call you 50 Cents? And he said, because I ain't worth 50 Cents. That's what he said. He said, I ain't worth 50 Cents. That's what he said. But he had influence. Those other soldiers listened to him. They did what he would say. I found out quickly 50 Cents had more power than I had. So I had to start, you know, I had to get 50 Cents close to me. I had to work with 50 Cents. I say, 50, come here. You know, we got to do something. It was a chemical unit. I said, you know, we got these fog oil, big drums. We got to get those things moved on the back of the truck, man. I need your help. See, can you get your team together? He ain't had no rank. 50 would say, I need 5 soldiers over here. They'd line up. He was tough. He was a leader. And it was given from beneath. Wasn't given from the top, because we wouldn't have picked him. Right. I mean, the boy said, I ain't worth 50 cents. That's what he said. Like, really? I agree with you. And so and so leadership is a choice. But I want to mention this point right here, because I want to show you that, and I think we are walking that road, that it doesn't matter what your title is. Really doesn't. God has called you to influence. And because you're doing it in this vision, pastor's only impact, you know, apart from prayer, we know he prays and all of that. But as far as the organization, his effect on the organization is through us. Because no matter how much he pray, God is not going to come down, go in the office, and do what you've been assigned to do. Paul said, you know, don't be talking about Jesus coming back down here. He said, the word is nigh you. Next slide. Common leadership issues. Sometimes, and this is think outside the organization. Sometimes we allow people to just happen. You ever work somewhere where Joe, people say Joe was always like that? You know, no coaching, no mentoring, no guiding, and just allowed to happen. Just go all over the place causing trouble. Nobody really, no, it doesn't happen here because this is Faith Chapel. But I'm talking about out there. And so sometimes we just allow people to happen. Quite often, and we're going to talk about communication later, quite often the leader has an expectation and the employee or the team doesn't know what it is. Never happened to you, I'm sure. You ever had an evaluation and you looked at the evaluation, you're thinking, I didn't know I was responsible for that. Nobody ever told me I was supposed to. And now my annual evaluation, I call it tater sacking from the country sometimes. Tater sacking simply is, you know, annual evaluation, semi-annual, whatever it is. Employee is doing some behavior that's not meeting standard. So the leader doesn't say anything. It's just another tater. In the city, it's potato, but in the country, it's tater. And they just take the tater and stick it in the bag up under the desk. Came in late 3 times in a row, there's another tater. Then all these complaints came in last week, here's another tater. And then when the evaluation roll around, they take this big bag of taters out, and when you come in there, they go bang right across your head. And you're thinking, where did all that come from? So we have to make sure we're clear on our expectations. Around here, we call it a lot role clarity and all of that. We have to make sure we're clear on that, that everyone knows what the expectation is. Then there's a lack of coaching and mentoring. And then here's my bell curve. It's just, I think there's some scientific basis to this. But in most organizations, and once again, Faith Chapel is not the norm, because you have a pastor and CEO who's engaged in mentoring and developing. You don't see that in a lot of organizations. But the norm outside the walls is in any organization of significant size, you have 5 to 15% of the employees who are great. Great. These are the ones that when the business is going to be closed because of ice erodes, they show up anyway. Ice erodes don't stop them because they saw the weather forecast and drove halfway to work last night, slept in the car, and made sure they got here this morning. That group, you know, those are the ones where they just all over it. I mean, they just all over it. They all over it. And so then you have this reflective group in the center. That's the bulk, 70 to 90%, depending on the organization. They're good employees. They come to work. They do their jobs. And then you have this other leadership challenge, 5 to 15% somewhere in there. Those are the ones who are just, you know, you want to help them have a career change. But not here, we're talking about out there. And so that reflective group, what I find, and it's easy to slip into it, as an organization, we spend more time on the 5 to 15% that's not doing right. You know, think back to where you used to work. They got all the attention because everybody had to focus on correcting those mistakes, trying to get all the documentation to take the right actions and all of that. And so it's important that we deal with that, but quite often the group of employees in the center, the bulk, at times don't get the attention that they deserve. They don't get the mentoring and coaching that they deserve at times, depending on the organization. And so we have to really be cognizant of that. Next slide. Common leadership issues. Just something for you to remember. This is so funny to me because I've seen it in over the course of the last 30 years. Number one, problem employees. Quite often leaders get together and complain, but ignore. Not here. I'm talking about out there. You know. complain but ignore. Man, I can't believe Joe. Joe is just a problem. He just da-da-da-da-da. He won't do right, da-da-da-da-da-da. But no one's doing anything. Secondly, because of that, we undercommit Joe. So he has more time to mess up. Because we want to give the assignment to the person who's going to get it done. I know I got a witness here. When pastor gives the leader that important thing to do, you don't give it to Joe if Joe's your problem employee. Because you want to get it done, and you want to get it done right. So you give it to your stallion, the person who's going to get it done, the person who, once you give it to them, they're going to run with it, that kind of thing. Thirdly, quite often in the world, we transfer the problem. Large organizations, the problem employees have worked everywhere. We transfer them. I believe at the PD right now, there's probably a card game going on. And they're going, I give you Joe, and I give you DeMarcus if you give me Tommy. And we just trade them. And then that problem employee has worked everywhere. So they have a lot of experience. They work everywhere. They know about the administrative side. They know about the operation side. They know about this. They know about that. Because they've gone everywhere. And then when they want to transfer, and the new potential supervisor calls to find out about them, everybody gives them a good reference. Because they want them gone. Man, Joe is great. He's great. I tell you, he's outstanding. He would really be a blessing to your team over there. He really would. And then Joe gets over there. Then they figure it out. It's going to take them a couple of years to get Joe out of there because, you know, he's transferred in. You can't just turn around and transfer right back out. So then they work on it. Then they transfer him. And so Joe ends up all over the place. Then we promote the problem because Joe has all this experience now. And then because Joe is undercommitted, he has more time to study. So when the tests roll around, Joe is ready. Because the good employees, a lot of them can't quote the sick leave policy. Joe knows it. Paragraph 3C, page 8, I think subsection 1. Once I give you this excuse, you got 3 days to respond back, bro. You got 3 days to... See, they know all that stuff. And then finally, out in the world, we punish everyone with the new policy. Every policy has a story. It really does. It really does. Because sometimes I get a call, and I say, don't we have a policy against that? No, sir. Well, we need one. We need one. You know, we need one. Then what? There come a new policy. So then the policy comes out, everybody look at it, and they know why the policy came out. They say, you remember Joe was the one who did that? That policy came out 2 days later. When Joe, you remember Joe did that? The Joe policy. They have a name for it. Some of you might have heard about the other day that the bull on the interstate. We shot the bull. We killed the bull. So I'm in my office yesterday looking at the video of the bull on the interstate. It looked like something from the cowboy days. This rodeo bull is running down I-59. And we got police cars trying to trap the bull. And one of my deputy chiefs was saying, he's doing that wrong. I said, but we hadn't trained him on how to catch bulls. Why do we have an expectation that they know how to catch a bull with a police car? There's no class in the academy on that. We ain't writing nobody off because they didn't catch the bull just right. Leadership laboratory. See, we ain't never dealt with that before. And the cars got cameras on watching them. I mean, one of them knocked the bull down one time. The bull got back up. He's running down the interstate. Absolutely funny video. Big old horn sticking out. And it's a bull. Then he ended up over at East Lake Park. And why we have an expectation that they know how to catch a bull with a police car? Hadn't trained them. Leader has an expectation, and the employee don't know what it is. No policy on it. So, impact of failing to deal with problem employees. Number one, good employee performance is not reinforced because we want the good employees to understand that we recognize it, and that's the standard for us. Secondly, reflective employees, that group in the middle, they're confused. And at times, in some organizations, they're prone to drift downward. Then thirdly, the problem employee is empowered. And quite often, the organizational culture, I know Pastor's been talking a lot about culture lately, culture and the environment. Organizational culture drifts toward ineffectiveness, and we don't want that. We don't want that at all. So let's, next slide. No, we're talking about coaching today, but I could not talk about coaching without talking about mentoring, because quite often we use them in the same sentence, coaching and mentoring, but they're really a little different. They have some standards. They have some facets that are the same. But there's one key proponent that's different. So when you look at the definition of mentoring, this is how I defined it. One person develops and commits to the personal growth of another by investing insight, knowledge, wisdom, etc., in order to prepare that person for greater productivity or achievement in the future. Mentoring establishes a vision of what can be achieved and lays the groundwork for confidence and commitment to make it happen. Mentoring focuses on the future. It focuses on the future. Most people, when they want a mentor, they're not going to the mentor for the hearing now. They're going to get a mentor to facilitate where God is trying to get them to be. Mentoring is future focus. Whereas, next slide, coaching is purposeful, ongoing one-to-one dialogue between supervisor, we can call that person a coach, and employee for the purpose of developing skills and performance, the guidance of another person's development in new or existing skills during the practice of those skills. During the practice of those skills. When you play football, you will be on the practice field. The coach will be giving you pointers while you're going through it. During the practice of those skills, it concentrates on the here and now. Remember, we said mentoring, future focused. Coaching is here and now. Coaching here and now. Overcoming skill barriers and raising abilities. Next slide. Benefits of coaching: improves quality and productivity, boosts enthusiasm and morale, strengthens relationships with employees and promotes more effective communication between supervisors and employees and among employees. Coaching increases job satisfaction, and it builds trust and enhances employee loyalty. Why would we say, in your opinion, does coaching improve quality and productivity? If your supervisor, minister, manager, whatever the case might be, director, comes to you here and now and gives you some pointers on something, would that increase your productivity? Would it increase your commitment? How would you feel about a person who cared enough about you to try to influence what you're doing, to try to raise your skill level? You said great?
Yes.
You feel great? What else? What would that say about that supervisor?
They care.
They care. They care about me. And quite often out there, we don't see a lot of that, unfortunately. Next slide. I think we're right on time. Here we go. Want to hit this slide at 15 minutes? It's 16 minutes and 13 seconds right now. Yeah, good deal. All right, here's what we want to do. What we want to do is give you the next 15 minutes. Then we're going to take a break to do this build your own coach activity. So this is what we want you to do. Break up into groups of four. Discuss your definition and traits of a great coach, whatever those traits may be. You may vote on it, however you want to do it in your group. As a group, identify four traits of a great coach and a famous person. I said famous because I don't want you to say, like my Uncle Buck, and we don't know who your Uncle Buck is. So it may not be someone famous internationally, but someone that most of us are familiar with. So for example, you may say, I believe a great coach should be humble like Pastor Mike. One trait. But you can't use that one now because I put it up there. So you got to have four. This is important because, and then we'll select, you'll select one of your group members to just give us those four traits that you identify. So you may say, we identify these four traits. Humility, we believe a great coach should be humble like Pastor Mike, and that's important because a leader that's humble inspires the people to do more or is a great example. Our second trait is such and such. Our third trait is whatever the case is. And so we'll go through that, and I think the good part about that is by the time it's over, I don't know how many people are in here. How many do you think? About 50? Let's do groups of five then. Let's do groups of five, groups of five. And so you will come up with four traits that you think is important for a great coach and the person who exemplifies them. Maybe somebody in this room. They may be very athletic and a champion, like Pastor Byron.
When they were young.
When they were young. And so if you work on that for the next 15 minutes, then we're going to take a 15-minute break. Then we'll come back in and we'll resume. So you're on your own now.